All right, I'm going to be perhaps shifting gears a little bit just from what we've been talking about, in that I'm going to be talking about a shoot-specific endophyte, a shoot-specific fungus in tall fescue, and how it influences its rhizosphere environment. So to get started, a little bit about tall fescue and its distribution in the United States, and a little history and its background is introduced from Europe. Some of the accounts say that it came over in a shipment of China as packing material from Europe and found its way into the soil. And in 1931, it was first discovered in Kentucky as a fairly persistent grass species growing around in the hills there and characterized by a professor at the University of Kentucky, and now widely distributed as approximately 35 million acres are covered in tall fescue in some way. The interesting aspect of tall fescue is it has some interesting qualities. And briefly, just this map shows sort of the adapted area of major use. And again, uses such as forages for grazing, turf to stabilize land uses and things so you don't get soil erosion, things like that. This is the primary use. This is the adapted but very not principal area of use. In the blue regions here, it indicates an area that it can be used, but with irrigation. And then this yellow dotted line is what I'm going to sort of talk about a little bit right now, indicates the endophyte persistence, meaning as we go south of that line, you find more endophyte-infected grasses. You find more grass with the fungal endophyte, higher percentage of that, than as you move north. This has to do with some of its desirable qualities. So positives of this Neotyphodium, which is the fungus, tall fescue relationship are drought tolerance. It provides the grass with some drought tolerance. Anti-insect herbivory, so it actually produces agents and chemicals within the plant that inhibit insect herbivory on those tissues. Metal tolerance, it's been shown with copper and some other metals that it can resist sort of elevated metal concentrations within soil systems, which is important if you're maybe using this as a ground cover to remediate an area, to stabilize an area that's been impacted with metals from the anthropogenic sources. And nutrient efficiency. So it's also been shown in the presence of the endophyte, it's able to acquire phosphorus more efficiently in phosphorus-deficient conditions. There are, however, some negatives associated with this, and these were not necessarily quickly found, but it was experienced that they found that as they planted this crop, it had all these wonderful aspects, that they did see in cattle grazing specifically on endophyte-infected grasses what they described as summer slump or fescue toxicosis, where the animal would actually be eating this grass and show symptoms of, various symptoms. They would look ragged. They would have they would not be able to tolerate heat as much. They'd be lingering around their water holes and things. And another thing that's it's sort of very important, I'm from the University of Kentucky, so you know, we have a lot of racehorses and a lot of bluegrass around in fescue, but one of the things that is very bad for us is that mares giving birth to horses, they would actually be aborting their fetuses, which is not a very nice thing when you have a potentially $1 million racehorse that's in there and it's being aborted. So some pretty significant negatives. And then some ecological issues associated with the presence of the endophyte in this introduced species, and that it potentially outcompete native species. If you're trying to reestablish, for example, tallgrass prairies, that can be a pretty persistent character in that scheme where you can reduce biodiversity. So I want to talk a little bit about my rationale behind wanting to do this. I am not a plant physiologist. I'm actually trained as a soil chemist. But the thing that really intrigued me about this system was really these positives here, this metal tolerance, nutrient efficiency, these things that can be influenced, interestingly, by a shoot-specific, vertically transferred, meaning it doesn't ever get into the roots or anything like that. This is a fungus that sits in the leaves, but yet influences pretty drastically the biogeochemical, the cycling of chemicals and nutrients within the rhizosphere. And that's really where I come in. So I'm the rhizosphere scientist, where I'm looking at sort of the interface between the plant and the soil and how this fungus up there is influencing those processes down below. So little study has really been devoted to understanding those mechanisms. Really, it's been focused on, well, golly, this thing is, you know, causing mare death and making cows sick. How do we fix this? And then also I want to talk about, because of this, they've actually, and the causative agent of that is alkaloids that are produced in these grasses, that ergot alkaloids that can cause this, you know, positive things like anti-insect herbivory, and also the negatives such as the loss of the mares, the cows, cow health, I should say. So what I really want to do is also look at, they're starting to come out with new cultivars that have all these positives, but they manipulate the fungus to produce less of these ergot alkaloids, so they have less of the negative things. So how is that manipulation of that fungus in that interaction or that symbiosis between the plant influenced in the rhizosphere? So that's another sort of thing that brought me to this project. And again, these other things, ecological implications of the invasiveness of this, are we producing something that's going to be even more invasive to prairie systems or naturalized grasslands and things. And some other things. I have to put remediation technologies in there because my heart sort of comes from, and my training is really with phytoremediation and the use of plants to mitigate metals in soil systems. So I feel like there is some parallels to understanding endophytic relationships in plant tissues and how they do influence the biogeochemical cycling. From this rationale being that if 80% of land plants have endophytic organisms, bacterial, fungal, understanding how they influence these processes, maybe that can be tweaked, like we're tweaking it with these forages and used in a different way. So the project objectives, and this is fairly just getting underway, I'll say, but this is sort of the overall schematic of the thing. We have tall fescue, we have it infected and non-infected. You know, the clouds and things show that it's drought tolerant, it's fairly drought tolerant to heat stress. And down below ground is where I would really like to focus. And our first objective would really be to, well, okay, here's this fungus up there. It's definitely influencing the physiology and the function of the plant, and something's occurring in the rhizosphere that's changing. So what I first want to do is really look at the plant root exudates that are being exuded from this plant and characterize them. Under basal conditions, under normal growth conditions, here we have these regular, what they call common toxic endophyte, the one that you find in the wild, the one that's not been manipulated, and then you have all these novel strains. Let's characterize just what we're changing when we're manipulating these endophytes. And then once we've characterized these endophytes or these exudates by a variety of ways, liquid chromatography, mass spectrometry, and things, we say, are there unique components in that exudate that are unique to the fungus, the infected grass, and the non-infected? So what is that influence? What is that chemical change that's occurring? And how that affects sort of, this is the abiotic. How does it affect the metal acquisition ability? So if we can identify a chemical and then apply it to more on a basic soil chemistry level, the pure component, here's this component in the exudate, how does it adsorb? How does it desorb? How does it remove those metals? How efficient is it? So the kinetics of desorption of these specific exudate compounds. And then what I'm not really going to get into today, but what is also interesting to me is the ability of these root exudates to ward off pathogenic microorganisms or beneficial microorganisms within the rhizosphere. This is sort of an allelopathic sort of thinking in this respect. But I won't touch on that third objective too much today, just because I'm sort of just getting started in this. But as far as method one goes, and as I mentioned, you know, I want to characterize first the basal root exudate composition. So I'm going to look at endophyte infected, endophyte free, and then what I'm calling EN, which I'm designating as the novel endophyte. So we have these are sort of the common toxic wild variety endophyte, the grass with nothing, and then again, we've gone in and genetically manipulated the endophyte to produce less of the alkaloids, less of those negative things, and hopefully retain more of some of those positives. So what I'm trying to look at is the chemical basis for what are we retaining. And the way we do that, again, is we're going to grow these plants in pure culture, the various varieties. These are on a flatbed shaker under light. And we do some extractions of this nutrient solution that they're growing in. We do a hexane methanol extraction so we can look at the polar and non-polar organics that are being produced in here, and we characterize them with our HPLC and hopefully come out with a nice fingerprint. And I call this the basal root exudate composition because I'm really looking for, this is sort of the pulse of the organism unchallenged. Here it is, here's the grass, it's growing. What does it have in it? What's it exuding? So really, that's what we're after in objective two. In objective two, we actually characterize the root exudates, but we're challenging the plant. So now what we're doing in response, we're throwing in some environmental stimuli. We're saying, well, okay, you know, we know that you are able to perform better under phosphorus deficiency conditions. So let's make this system phosphorus deficient, pure system. Let's look at the exudate composition in that system and characterize it. And now let's look at it with phosphorus and let's characterize it and get some sort of idea of the chemistry, how this is being manipulated. And then of course we'll do the whole tissue analysis and look at the phosphorus distribution and several other things. This is a similar system we would use for looking at metal tolerance and all that sort of thing. And again, a pure culture system, because I really want to just look at the root exudate components, so not microbially influenced or anything like that within the rhizosphere. So again, brief methods. This is some things that I've been toying with in the lab and how to grow these tall fescue. These are magenta boxes that some of you may be familiar with. They're autoclavable. We built these little stilt stands with a mesh where we can plant our seeds. We have the shoot and the roots very well divided in here. They don't have very much headspace, so I'm actually going to be growing them in these float systems, which are very convenient because they have a nice little pore spout and a cap. So you can uncap it, pure under in-exit conditions, and pour off this exudate and characterize it. 7 days, 14 days, 21 days into growth, however long. So one of the important things, of course, is to screen your populations. You know, is it endophyte affected, is it not? And this is just something I was toying with. You know, normally you do this sort of colorimetric assay where you throw a dye in and you look under a light microscope. And this is just something that I did with confocal laser scanning microscopy, where we used a DNA, RNA specific dye where we stained some of these plants. And what you actually see are the fungal hyphae within the plant leaf, the plant sheath. And you see them here. This is the edge of the leaf. And then this is a endophyte free, which is indicated by these symbols. So you don't actually see the hyphae growing in the pot negative. This is sort of an expensive way of going about doing it, but I was already doing some confocal. But so surely enough, yes, we are, our cultivars are clean. Another interesting thing that we did is just a very simple colorimetric assay within the solution that the plants were growing in. Because one of the hypotheses is, in the presence of this shoot-specific endophyte, plants produce more phenolics. So that's actually what this assay is. This is the common toxic endophyte, non-manipulated. We actually see in the infected variety of Kentucky 31 here, we see a more, so this is measured in absorbance, but this is indicating that there are more phenolics produced in the plus versus the minus. And then we have this suite of novel endophyte-infected grass and cultivar mixtures, and we can see, you know, here's a negative, which is this strain of grass, and here it's with this AR584 is the type of fungal endophyte, and we can see how these manipulation of the novel with the grass can actually influence this phenolic concentration in the rhizosphere. So what I find neat about this is that I have our fescue breeder out there, and he's breeding, and he sees these great qualities in the plant, and he says, well, that's a great seed, and here it is. This is maybe some chemical basis behind, well, yes, maybe these are the reasons why you're seeing these positive aspects. And now this is almost the last slide here, where I told you that we're jumping to wanting to actually physically characterize or chemically specifically characterize what these exudate components are. And this is from the common toxic endophyte infected grass and the non-infected. And this is a little bit surprising, and we're actually in the process of rerunning some of these experiments. But I was expecting to see, oh, it's infected, it's going to have more exudate components. There's going to be some agent specific to it that it's going to exude. And what I'm actually finding is, where these errors indicated, there are actually less components, because each one of these peaks represents a specific chemical component that's eluted out. So there's actually less components in the E plus, and these are E minus. So this is under fairly controlled conditions. The plant hasn't been challenged at all. So the next experiments, which are actually running today, we're characterizing those challenged plants. So in conclusion, that clearly the endophyte is influencing, and somehow, the exudate composition that's coming out into the rhizosphere. It's influencing how it behaves and interacts with its environment. So the next step, of clearly, is our further characterization of these exudate composition. And then, of course, the bigger picture of this is, you know, this is just, as I said in my title, sort of the model system. We have a fairly well-characterized tall fescue. We have a very nice endophytologist that are at the University of Kentucky and folks who have a good grasp on the plant side of things. So what I'm really interested in is looking at the crosstalk between fungus to plant and who's controlling what. So if it's phosphorus deficient in the soil, is it the fungus saying, hey, we need more phosphorus, and the plant produces something and says, okay, well, here you go? Or is it does the fungus produce it itself, and that's what's exuded? So I'm very interested in that talk between those. So very quickly, I just want to conclude and acknowledge my my lab analysts who actually produce a lot of this data, Joe Cooper and Tim Phillips, our breeder there, Mike Gooden for the confocal work, and Rebecca McCauley for really turning me on to this idea. So thank you.
Thank you.